That's going to be a very confusing intro, huh?
Yeah, very. Where's Jim? Is he on his way, yeah?
I don't freaking know. He's probably finding some sheep that he really thinks is cute and going to hang out with it for a while.
Yeah, he'll be eating haggis or something.
Yeah, that's what he's going to be doing. He's from Scotland. You think he was eating haggis? No. He's eating sheep. And he's not here, so I can say that. I don't know. I got nothing. It's a weird day. I am in a weird mood. It's Friday. We don't normally do the podcast on Friday.
Yeah.
And now this is what our life has become, isn't it? Well, we're sitting on a Friday.
Two men's tournaments to talk about, at least one ladies' tournament, and they're halfway through the US Open 8-ball at the moment, right?
Yeah. Well, I know Shane just got eliminated, so they're down to maybe 7th, 8th. Yeah, I pulled it up. Yeah, it's Shane got knocked out 13-14, so they're down to the final 9 through 12 for the
– Where are you seeing the results?
It's on Digital Pool.
Digital Pool.
Digital Pool. Okay, I'll just send you the link right here, Scooter Butt.
Got it.
There you go. You know, I'm very helpful.
There we go. All right, cool. Shane's on like a bit of a – he looks like he's playing really, really good. Really good. You can't win every
Not as good as Carlo Beato. Whoa, he must have finished up with his sheep.
James?
What's up, Jimbo?
Oh, everybody's sick at home. The little one's sick. Everybody's sick. Oh, it's a nightmare at the moment. Hello, everybody.
You don't sound very well either, to be fair.
I'm just getting over it a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. So what are we talking about? That tournament that I didn't watch because it was crap.
We were just saying, well, I was just saying that Shane looks like he's playing well, but Nate, being argumentative, said that Beato.
That doesn't sound like me.
I don't want to go negative straight away, but did you see what Beato did against
I see what happened to Beato. I'm not sure. Yeah. Are you talking about the foul he made?
Yeah, with the eight on the eight ball, hit it with his hand. Yeah.
Now, see, I wanted to actually talk about this because I think it's quite a valid thing. You know, there's been quite a few fouls we've seen recently, and Josh Filler got on and got interviewed and explained his side of the story. I'd like to see that happen more often, although it's going to be quite difficult for anybody to approach a player afterwards and say, oh, by the way, you fouled that shot. Do you want to talk about it?
I mean, he knows.
But Beato's one is one of those ones that, I mean, there's three main ones. We saw the Filler one. And that's just he didn't know the rule.
Yeah.
And his opponent either didn't or didn't see what happened either.
Yeah.
The Beato one for me is he knows he's touched something. But is he aware it's the ball or does he think he maybe touched the rail?
I think he
Because knows. I've played before from that position where you feel your knuckles run along the top of something, but is it the side of the edge of the table or is it the ball? You know, and but yeah, it was a clear foul. Shane jumping a ball as well, and he hit the eight when he was jumping over the top of it.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, and but it's one of those, you know, when you're jumping and you're jumping from what quite a steep angle, the ball you're jumping over is not on your eye line. And when your eyes do transfer from the cue ball to where you're shooting to, by that time it's already over the ball, and it only just grazed it. It really didn't move much. It didn't affect the path of the white in any way. So that would be very difficult for him to see, and you wouldn't hear it either. But the Beato one is you saw by his reaction, he knew that his fingers touched something. Okay. What are you going to do about it? I mean, just another issue with that whole tournament, in my opinion. Yeah, right from day one, I just didn't like it.
The weirdest tournament.
Prize money was great. You know, you can't argue with that. You have a world champion. There were some great matches.
Yeah,
but right from the start, I kind of lost a little bit of interest in that tournament. Right from
the format, the format is goofy.
In my opinion, 64 players isn't a world championship.
Yeah,
I don't agree with that. I don't like the way the players were chosen.
Yeah,
64 players when you clearly do not have the. I have no problem with 64 players as long as it's pretty clearly the 64 best players in the world.
Well, this is it. And the problem, the biggest problem I have with it is, I mean, you've got 60-foot. The WPA are obviously, they love their ranking. This is the whole fight they have with Matchroom about it's our ranking and you can't have it. So they love their ranking so much, but they have a field of 64 and they only give 16 from the world ranking.
Yeah.
That's not enough. There should be 32 for a start, at least. Now, if you're only going to give 16 from the world ranking, but then you're going to give 13, maybe 14 places from the Eurotour ranking, I mean, are you telling me that the number 13 on the Eurotour ranking is more deserved of a place at the World Championships than the number 17 on the world ranking? That is absolutely ridiculous. But I know exactly why it's, I know, or I have my a strong opinion on why that has happened. I mean, the Eurotour has become what we said and what a lot of people thought it would become, a little bit second rate. The top guys, there's no value for them anymore, so they're not going anymore. So you see now, if you look at the last 16s of the last couple of Eurotours, you see that there's a distinct difference in what it used to be. So they need to add value to that tournament and that tour again. Now, they're not going to add financial value to it because either they won't or they can't, because if they could, they would have already over the years. So how do they add value to it? They make the ranking worth a lot more than it should be worth.
Yeah.
You know? And for me, if there's 16 from the world ranking and 14 from the Eurotour ranking or 13, whatever it was, that doesn't match up to me. It should be 32 from the world ranking. The Eurotour maybe gets 8 spots. Then the other federations get theirs. That 16, only 16 from the world ranking at a field of 64 is ridiculous. And some of the players that just didn't get an invite there is just ridiculous. And yeah, some of the players that were there that were basically dead wood in the tournament. I mean, you're going to get that if you give your federation their best players the spots, and it doesn't always balance. They're always going to, in some federations, are going to be weaker than the weaker players from other federations. But I don't understand. Right then, they kind of lost me for a world championship when I saw that. It didn't make sense to me. And then there was a lot of controversy about what happened with Skylar and stuff like that over the two events. So some of it's justified, some of it's not justified, in my opinion. The way Facebook blew up at things that had gone on is just, Facebook gets out of hand sometimes. To suggest that he was victimized, I'm not entirely sure that that's correct.
But the drug test?
Well, the drug that's the way the drug test happens. They walk up to your table and say...
It's just never happened on video before. It's just never happened on video.
What's the point? And there's people on social media saying that this has been public. It's in public for everybody to see, and it's embarrassing for the player. Says, well, no. If anything's made it public, it's people like you sharing everything, every video 20 times on Facebook. That's what makes it public for people to see.
I still don't disagree with that.
At the Euros and the European Championships, the guy walks over to you and says, "You've been selected for the drug test. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to escort you to the drug testing station." And you just say, okay, you pack your cues away and you walk off, and that's it. There's no embarrassment. Nobody's accusing you of taking drugs. They're just saying your name came out of the hat. Come with me. That's it. That's all there is to it.
That's still just so. I don't agree with that though. I mean, we're talking about like small differences here, but there's no reason that the drug test cannot happen before the event. There's a players meeting.
It's in the rules though.
I understand it's in the rules, but that doesn't change the fact that it doesn't have to be in the rules, or it could be in the rules for before the event.
You can't drug test somebody when the event hasn't started because you haven't started.
You can't drug test somebody before they've performed. You have to drug test in sports. You have to drug test after they've performed. You can't drug test before they've performed.
Like it's in.
What are you testing for? What are you testing for?
There's a list of banned substances, and it's available to all the players.
Okay, well then, why are you only testing at the end of the event? Why don't
you're
you
only test at the end of the event? You're not only testing at the end of the event.
The players
who perform the best have more chance of getting tested.
Well, they do pick. Well, they pick three from the last 16, is my understanding. Three randomly from the last 16 players.
And I heard that all of the last 8 were tested.
Well, there you go then. So they might have changed it. But remember, Darren got tested a couple of years ago at the Wells. He's just come off a bad beat. Drug testers came straight over to him. He's obviously like so highly strung when he's in a tournament situation. And yeah, he wasn't happy. I think he said some things, but at the end of the day, it was all, you know, he was just annoyed that somebody had asked him at that particular moment in time. He wanted to be left alone. But
what he was annoyed with, I think, was that he just played a tournament previously and he got selected for the drug test there.
Oh, there you go then.
We yeah, ended it's up probably two tournaments in a row. Well, and he felt like he was getting picked on, I think.
He felt like he was getting
It's a little on. Bit of everything. I'm sure it's a little bit of everything. Because Darren doesn't handle losing the best. I mean, a lot of top players don't handle losing the best, but Darren is famously known for not handling losing the best. And then with what you're saying, you know, getting picked on twice in a row or feeling like he got picked on twice in a row, but it's all of it, right?
Yeah.
So Robert Biznek has Adderall. I mean, I'm not sure. Is Adderall tested for?
Yeah. I mean, they test for everything. I've got the list somewhere.
Alcohol, you know, if you look at it from the drug testers, from WADA's point of view, for them to make it as easy as possible to do the tests and to have the to limit the amount of aggravation it costs the players or the time that it costs the players, the best moment for them to do it is when a player has lost a match and is out of the tournament, because then you can just go over to them. They don't have another match in an hour. They don't need to prepare for another match. So you go to the losing player and you say, now you have to come for a drug test. You're not disrupting the tournament anymore. The tournament is finished. So that makes the most sense as far as the drug testers are. How do they make sure they get the player and the player doesn't have any opportunity to then take another substance that counteracts the substance they've taken during their match or just before their match? They have to catch them at the end of the match while they're packing the cues away and say, you've been selected for a drug test. Don't go anywhere. I will escort you and you stay in my custody until the drug test has been taken. That's just the way it is. It's very cold and it's not nice, but that's the way the drug testing is, and it's going to happen more and more.
Players will have to just accept that I've been picked.
And it's not an embarrassment. It's not an accusation. I don't understand this whole thing about, you know, you're slurring a player's reputation by doing this in front of spectators that are there. No, you're not. It's just a standard thing saying, Skyler, your name came out of the hat. It was a build-up of things for Skyler as well, and for the people that were with Skyler, that they kept seeing that almost every time he came to the table, there was something happening, you know? Yeah. Unfortunate. I'll tell you what, and I don't know if Skyler's watching or anyone from Sky. if I was running a tournament and I wanted to do a drug test and I wanted it to be the least controversial possible drug test and guarantee that there's not going to be any kickback, Skyler's probably the guy I would choose to drug test if I was going to choose somebody, not to try and catch him out. One, I know he's going to pass. Two, he's probably not going to argue about it because he's just a really friendly, nice guy, you know, and, you know, there's going to be no hassle about it. But it just, you know, it was other people that made a problem of it, not really Skyler. You know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I mean, of course he was a little bit irritated, but Skyler getting irritated is, you know, like we... Skyler, when he's really irritated, he acts like we do when we wake up and see that it's raining, kind of thing. You know, just a bit pissed off. He never really gets irritated.
Well, just like Darren, you know, Darren kind of had a buildup of a bunch of different things that kind of set off his outburst. I'm sure Sky was pissed off for the entire event, from the stuff that he was being subjected to. You know, losing the rack, getting a yellow card, being told he can't go to the bathroom when he wants to. You know, the entire event was not a good one for him. The lag situation for Skyler, yeah. I mean, if you look back at what
things just always seem to happen
and,
to him.
And then, you know, you get pulled off right after a pretty tough loss. You get pulled off. You get pulled off, and now you have to do a drug test. How many things can you have go wrong in one total event? I mean, it's silly.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with the whole thing that happened with the lag. I think he was shafted there. I think it's a stupid rule. I mean, what you're going to end up having there is that players are going to stand there and nobody's going to want to lag first. They're going to be waiting for each other to lag, because I can sit and lag with Chris and I'll just wait till he hits it. If I think it's going to be a good one, I'll just do nothing and I'll get another shot. If I think he's hit it badly, then I'll lag and win the lag.
Well, this is kind of what we talked about yesterday, where I said, like, I would just be a bad person for this. Cause I would, like, Jim, could you imagine if you and I played on stream and you and I just got together and we're like, you know, Jim, this is the stupidest rule in the world. And there's like a little rule on there that says, like, if both lags are bad, you restart. Like, could you imagine the fun you and I could have just absolutely pissing with the referees on live camera? That would be fun, wouldn't it?
It wouldn't surprise me if two players got together and said, "Let's, you know, come on, let's make a point of this."
Oh, I hope it would be like Dwayne too, or like Angela. It'd be so much fun.
Yeah, imagine that if two players got together, two that like a little bit, let's say a Jason and I don't know,
Sky, Jason and Sky.
Jason and Sky. Right. And the says, you know what? Let's make sure the referee has to set these balls up 10 times before the match starts on the live stream where everybody's watching. We're going to make sure that this lag takes 20 minutes.
I think it'd be I'll hit the first one.
You do nothing. You hit the second one. I'll do nothing. We'll see. You know.
And then we'll both shoot them straight into the corner pockets over and over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
Exactly. We'll both bang them straight into the side rails. Oh, sorry. Gotta go again.
Whoop! Got a little side spin on that one.
I mean, it's Sky got shafted on that one. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
The patches, forcing people to wear patches and then charging them $10 per patch and stuff.
I mean, that's... And saying that if you don't, you're going to forfeit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was on holiday anyway, so I wasn't really in a position to follow it intensely. But when I did have time, I still didn't. I watched a couple of things, but... congratulations to Shane. No big surprise there that he's won another 10-ball title. At the US Open, and congratulations to Beato. He was the best player there. If you look at the results he had, he smashed everybody.
Yeah. Dennis had a really good tournament as well.
Shout out to Dennis Grab. I contacted him around about the quarter final. He was playing really, really well. Good for him.
Quarters last year, now semis this year. So that's solid. That's really solid.
Yep. And am I wrong in saying that it was Hill too. His loss to Naoki. I mean, Naoki Oi, good for him. I mean, if there's one thing that we've talked about on the podcast before, it's like Naoki Oi always gets all these invites, and I think it's because of the spectacle that he makes around events. Although he hasn't really done anything crazy for a long time, but I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I'm pretty sure he was getting invited to most of his events because of his antics and because of his interviews, more or less because of his play on the table. And this might be the best. This actually probably is the best finish of his career at this point.
Really?
Well, he'll have won events, but yeah, I mean, they get medals.
He's won like
a silver medal at a World Championships is probably his best so far.
Yeah. Some achievement, it's good.
As far as I remember, I think the only event that he's won of consequence was like an All Japan 9-ball or something like that.
Yeah, it was on the Asian Championship, which was still a stacked field. Yeah,
I mean it is, but it's not exactly. You know, a World 10 ball or a European Open or a UK Open or US Open or something like that.
Do you know what I read the other day? Naoki and anybody in Japan that wants to call themselves a professional pool player has to pay the equivalent of $100 a month to their federation.
And just in order to call yourself a professional player?
Yeah. And you're banned from most of the tournaments because you are a professional.
So why would anyone call themselves a professional?
Well, I think to play in certain events, you have to, just like we do for the British one. You're pretending you're Dutch at the minute, but for the rest of us British people, we have to pay 100 to the, can't even remember what it's called now. We've got a federation somewhere, though.
The British Pool Federation.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, right there.
I don't know what makes you a professional. As soon as you get sponsorship, are you a professional? As soon as you enter tournaments where there's money involved, are you a professional? I don't know what. What is a professional pool player?
I don't know, because there's only like 10 guys in the world that actually make what you could call a living from playing. So
they're the actual professional.
No, look, what, 10 people that make more than 100 grand a year?
Well, I mean, it depends what you call a living, right? I mean, there's way more than 10 players in the world that make a living playing pool.
£80,000, take all your travel, all of that stuff.
There's three of them. There's three of them in the U.S. alone. I mean, that's a low number, but there's three of them in the U.S. alone.
I understand what Chris is saying. I think
you're talking about from total just prize funds.
Yeah,
you're not talking about sponsors.
There's probably only 10 players in the world who could be self-sufficient.
Yes, that's a better way of putting it.
Without sponsorship,
they can support. They could support themselves without sponsorship.
Yeah, sure. They're good enough to support.
Yeah,
themselves.
But how? I mean, you're right. When you put it that way, and if you just look off of how much they make off of prize funds, it might not even be 10. It might not be. If you just look off how much money AZ. Let's go to AZ Billiards and look at their money ranking. We'll see exactly. I mean, I guess it's very, very early in the year.
I mean, Filler obviously has made probably
close probably over 100 already.
Well, same, yeah, but it's probably the last 5 years since he won the US Open 2019, he's probably made million and a half, which is like that guy's smoking, he's on fire. But for like, I don't want to call any names out, but there are a ton of people that would say they were pro, but they don't make enough to, and that's what their full time endeavor is, and they don't make jack shit really.
Yeah, if they didn't get the sponsorship money at the start of every season, they'd be done.
I'd say they were more like, yeah, you're right.
I mean, yeah, and I'm sure there's probably a way to navigate back into the years of AZ Billiards. So, yeah, I mean, I'm seeing it all for this year. And if you just look, I mean, what we're basically a sixth of the way through the year, right? So Carlo Beato's already made 114,000. Josh Filler 75, Fedor Gore 75, Nayuki Oi 50, Lee Van Cortese. But it's basically everybody has just done anything in the last event.
I was going to say Filler got all these 75 at the Derby. He must have more than that.
76,525. I mean, he went 2 and out in the World 10 Ball, and I don't think he went very deep in the Las Vegas Open, did he?
Yeah, that doesn't cash you, does it? Yeah.
No. Yeah. So what are you adding there? Yeah. And I don't think he's not at Griff's right now for the 9 Ball or 10 Ball, the U.S. Open stuff.
Yeah. Well, is that not where he got filmed by for his interview with Melina Mike about his foul?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I guess.
Of course, his foul was during the U.S. Open 10 Ball, mate.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. You're right.
So, unless they decided that World Championships.
Oh yeah, he got fifth. He
won fouls only as well. That wouldn't surprise me.
Fifth, sixth, but he only made $1,500 for fifth, sixth.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
$1,500 US Open fifth, sixth. Yeah.
Well, that's. I mean, I'm not trying to crap on anybody. But these US Open events used to be quite prestigious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they used to have a little bit of weight tied to them, and now they're just nothings.
They're still all prestigious. There's still a lot of Shane just he will keep going back to them. I mean,
he'll keep going back to them, but it's not as prestigious as Derby City. It's not as prestigious as the Open or Turning Stone.
Was it ever?
Yeah, at one point, yeah, for sure.
Not Derby.
Not Derby, but like the Texas Open. It was at least in the same category, and now they're just, I don't know.
Travis is saying that Shane got 9,500 for his 10 ball world champ, 10 ball US Open.
Yeah, there's still four players left on the A side. It's Victor Zielinski, Lee Van Cortese, FSR, and Joshua Filler. So yeah, he's playing in the 8 ball as well.
At the end of the day, these tournaments, if you schedule them around the world 10 ball, then players are going to come. You're going to fill them with good names, because people are there already. So
it's a good earning opportunity it's just more money while they're there. So
people are not going to travel from all over the world for that prize money, but if they're already in Vegas, then they'll play in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, if this wasn't on the back of the World 10 Ball, this wouldn't have half of this field.
No.
Yeah, of course.
And that's with like basically what there's going to be. There's going to be a couple $10,000 first places, give or take, with the 8 ball, the 10 ball. And I'm sure there'll still probably be $5,000 or $6,000 for first for Banks, one pocket.
Yeah.
That's still going on too. I mean, it's basically like a less money Derby City, but it's a way cheaper event, because you can stay anywhere you want in Vegas and just, commute to Griff's. Derby City's quite expensive.
Yeah, but I mean, the US Open events are way harder fields than what the Derby would be also, I guess. You've got a lot of good players, and, as you say, already in the area. Not always the case for Derby.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we'll talk more about the US Open, I guess, in a little bit.
That's the fifth time Shane's won that.
Fifth time, yeah. He didn't even know himself. He was interviewed and they asked him. He said three, maybe four, but I think three. Turns out it was five. He's won.
Matt Poland says the field is strong. The only thing that's lost is the hype. I mean, that's definitely a thing. I definitely agree with that. It's still not anywhere close to as tough as, let's say, Derby City, obviously. But, even the Las Vegas Open, stuff like that. I mean, it's not as tough as those fields. I'm actually kind of surprised how many players didn't hang around and play in these events every single year. I mean, there's still good players, don't get me wrong, but I mean, there's only 64 players that played in this event. Not even 64 players. A 64-person bracket.
Yeah, there's 59 people in the eight ball, I think. 57 or 59, I read last night.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at some of these players, SVB, Vitaly. Well, here, this is the 10 ball, the finals. First place, SVB. Second place, Vitaly Petsura. Third, Lee Van Corteza, Daniel Maciol. Fifth, sixth, Billy Thorpe and Joshua Filler. Seventh, eighth, Max Lechner, Albin Ocean. 9th through 12th, Roland Garcia, Carlo Beato, Oliver Ruger, Nick De Leon. And then from there, I mean, you go down, and I'm not saying that these players aren't good players, but I mean, we're dropping off pretty drastically to Dennis Laskowski, Yumin Dorner, John Mora, Danny Olson, Sina Vildesda, FSR. I don't want to say that. I'm not putting him in that, but
there's still loads of good players in it.
Ivan Belmonte, Mario He, Evan Lunda, Silviano Liu, Alex Pagulayan, Andre Junorta. I mean, that's 17th through 24th. There's definitely a drop off once you get to that point. That you're not going to see that you're not going to see that at a Texas Open, really. Maybe not really even a Texas Open, a Turning Stone probably, but. It's still kind of just a regional event, I guess. It's just a bummer that the U.S. Open is kind of fallen to this. But that's what's going to happen when the Matchroom continues to create new events, that every single one of them is now a staple of World Pool. So,
yeah.
And shout out to Billy Thorpe, crushing Carlo Beato.
It was 9-0, 9-1.
9-1.
9-1.
gave him some chair time. Sure. Billy playing well again, or having phases where he's playing well again. Good to see.
When he's on fire and when he gets going, there's like
he's got a gear.
There's no. He stop
has, he's a, Billy's a brilliant player, and he's I think he can be quite intimidating when he's on the table. You know.
Oh, he is big time.
USA need him. You know, we always end up talking about Moscone. Yeah. USA need him, so hopefully he can start playing some more events and getting his rhythm going and getting used to his new cues properly. And he's obviously still got that gear. Even with his new equipment, to be able to do that to Beato.
He's got balls as well. Like,
he's got nuts. He's got big
bollocks, mate. Unbelievable. He's not, doesn't appear to be frightened of absolutely anything. He's just.
No, he's not the guy that's going to choke. He might miss just because he throws in a bad one, but choking is not really in his mentality.
His highest gear, take Federer out of the equation, but his highest gear would probably. Only Shane that's got a higher gear, right? American player.
Sky's high gear is pretty fucking sick.
I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying, like,
I think his high gear is comparable with Sky. I don't think he doesn't reach Shane or Federer, but he certainly blasts Tyler and the rest of them out of the water when he hits his high gear.
Monster.
And he's got that ability to pull out the shot that you need to play. You know. You know, he'll pull out a sick bank or a sick combi. Loads of
table knowledge.
He's definitely not afraid of any shots. He's not afraid
He's not scared to take a shot on. Yeah. And when he's playing well, he's in stroke. He'll make it most of the time, you know.
I saw him play in this. I don't know where they were from. They might have been Puerto Rican or something, but there was loads of them in Rack's pool room. And Billy was playing all of them, one pocket, one ball. And he's just pulling out these mad little, and they were playing for a lot, like a few thousand. And he was just pulling
out. Like that's that 8-year-old that plays chess against like 25 people at once and just goes table to table to table to table back to back.
No, I mean, like as soon as somebody.
Oh, okay. Because that'd be really cool.
That would be pretty sick to watch.
The next person would step up, but he just got so much knowledge and his touch is great. And yeah, he's just a monster.
If I'm not mistaken, I think. Didn't Ronnie O'Sullivan do that at like some snooker thing? At some, I don't know, something in China where he played like four people at once playing like nine ball?
Maybe.
Was that not some sort of promotional video or something? He never actually did it.
I think, well,
was it not some film that was made or something like that?
If it's a promotional video, doesn't that mean that he did it?
No, but it was all cut and pasted to make it look better than it actually.
Oh, I see.
Oh, maybe that could be. I think he actually did it, but I could be wrong on that. I don't know. All right. Well, I guess we never really did talk all that much about the actual results of the World 10 Ball. So let's go through that. Carlo Beato obviously was our winner. We already established that. Naoki Oi gets second place. The semifinalists were Fedor Gorst and Dennis Graba. The quarterfinalists are Koping Chung, Albin Ocean, FSR, and Bader Al-Dawadi. And then I guess the final 16 includes Cheng Jung Lin, Wojtek Szewczuk, Shane Van Boning, Mieszko Fortunski, Ko Ping Yi, Aloysius Yap, Sky Woodward, and Eklund Kachi. So as an American, pretty sure that you can look at Shane Van Boning and kind of say that his best game of his career has always been 10 ball, and he is now probably going to go through his career never winning a 10 ball. This was kind of his last chance, I think.
Shane won we'll see what the...
No, he did not. He won the 8 ball and the 9 ball.
Oh, wow. I thought he...
Nope,
oh,
he won
the 8 ball. Oh, okay.
He won the 8 ball last year. He won the World 8 ball, and he won the World 9 ball 3 years ago now, I believe, right? Coming up on 3 years ago.
His last chance. I mean...
We'll see what the WPA does. We'll see what the WPA does. I mean, maybe he'll take a swing.
They're not banning anybody now, are they?
For now. I mean, they never truly said, well, I don't know. I mean, we're going to talk about that. You want to jump into this conversation right now? What's going on, Jim? Can you explain to our listeners what the heck is going on?
Well, you mean the statement that was put out by the WPA? I can tell you exactly what that was about.
And then Matchroom's response to it was basically like, yeah, whatever they want to do, let them have their fun.
Well, the WP and a few people fell in. I mean, you got to understand, this is a letter that's been worded in English and been sent out throughout the world. So not everybody's first language is English. So people read it. And I think the letter was designed to look like it as well. You know, if you didn't read it really, really carefully, it could look like Matchroom and the WPA had come to an agreement and that all these events were now going to be sanctioned by the WPA, because the wording was very close to actually saying that. Just a couple of words here and there gave it away that it wasn't. Now everybody goes, oh, brilliant. They've come together and it's all, even people, natural English speakers, they just read it and they think that it's all been sorted out. Now, it was clear to me when I read it, there has been no agreement being made. This is just the WPA basically saying, we are not going to ban players, but they're putting sparkles and jewelry all around it and making it look all pretty and making it look like it's they're doing it in the best interest of the players. They're not doing the best interest of the players. They knew that they'd called the bluff and the bluff hadn't worked and they were in the crap if they went ahead with the bans. So they decided to backtrack on it and write this very nice office note to say, you know, we are awesome and we've got the players' best interests at hearts, and we will treat these following events as sanctioned events, which basically means we're exempting these events from the bans. So the bans are still there for other events, possibly, but they're exempting now. So the ban was created specifically for Matchroom events, but now they've backtracked and said the Matchroom events will be exempted from the ban, except for the Hanoi Open, because they even forgot to put the Hanoi Open in it.
Did they forget to put it on, or...?
That they've forgotten. Well, maybe that's because that's in Asia. The Asian Federation has said, no, you're not doing that. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see whether that was a mistake or not. But basically what they've turned around and saying, yeah, okay, so we're not doing the ban anymore. What's happening with Hanoi? I don't know. Maybe there's something else going on with the Asian Federations there. So basically the players are free to go and play whatever they want. The only restriction the players now have is the restriction that Matchroom has in their contract to say, you're not required to play in our events, but you are not allowed to play another 9-ball event during one of our events if you don't play in our event. So, it was a very nice note. Matchroom then reacted to turn around and say, hold on a minute, before. I'm not so much because of the wording of the letter itself, but more because of the reaction that was coming out on Facebook and everybody sharing it, saying agreement has been made. Even the Dutch Federation shared it and said agreement has been made. These events are now sanctioned. I had to contact them and say, no, don't start putting that, because that's not actually what's happened. And then Matchroom proud to say, no, there's not been an announcement, but we are willing to basically saying these events are still sanctioned solely by the WNTPCDFQSR, whatever it is they call themselves, and that it's not sanctioned by the WPA. Whether that will happen in the future, I don't know. Well, the WPA still have the World Nine Ball, and they'll—I don't know whether they're getting their 5% or whatever it is of the 1 million.
I don't think it's. I don't think that they definitely do have involvement in the World Nine Ball.
I think they do. The World Nine Ball is sanctioned by the WPA.
Will it be?
It is.
No, the event hasn't. Matchroom don't need it, I would say, at this point in time. They might just say, fuck it, we don't want it to be sanctioned. And they're going to put big events over the top of the Qatar Open and the China Open. Almost.
But I think they already have a contractual agreement with the WPA that they can't break about the World Nine Ball.
That's in place already. Oh, there you go. You know more than me then.
I don't know if there's a time limit on it. Nate, your audio's going off. I don't know if there's a time limit or not. Or
whoops. There was a, from what I was told, I think there was like a 10-year agreement.
Okay.
That's secondhand. I don't know that that's exactly true.
It'll all go to shit anyway, because they're going to put nine ball events, World Nine Ball Tour events, over the top of the Qatar Open and the China Open anyway. Almost definitely Barry Henn's going to make that happen. Yeah. And they might.
I think I do my best work when I'm muted, anyways, Jim.
I agree. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I think Match and Barry Henn they're pretty clear on what, you know, Barry and Emily, they're pretty clear that this is the direction they're going. We are going in that direction. If you want to go that way, go that way. We don't care. Or you can come with us this direction. Either way, we're still going this way. You're not going to get us to go any other way. This is the way we're going. So you either go with or you go against. And it hasn't really worked out well for people that have gone against in the past, you know. But we'll see. I hope, you know, I'm glad that they've lifted the ban. I think that was a sensible thing. It's going to save a lot of events within the WPA.
I don't know that they lifted the ban, though. They didn't lift the ban.
They've exempted the same players that play in these events will not get banned from WPA events. It says it clearly.
They were only majors, though, right? So that means you can't play in any of the smaller ones.
That's why they did. They never lifted the ban, right? So, yeah, there's going to be events in Boston this week.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
This coming week.
But is the prize fund going to be enough that the WPA should be getting sanctioned on it?
There's going to be plenty of international players there.
For it to be one of those events, it has to be
50,000
eligible for sanction. If it's not eligible for sanction, then they can't use it as a ban because it's not eligible for sanction anyway.
Yeah.
Well, and Stuart Rogers is on the WPA board. I mean, he said it right there. Like the events, they're not lifting the ban. They're just treating a segment of events as
they're basically exempting. They're exempting those tournaments from the threatened ban. They're exempting those tournaments.
Correct.
I mean, Stuart's using the wording is again treated as sanctions. I think that's as sanctioned. It's misleading. Why can't you just say they're exempted and stop using the word sanctioned? Because it's making people that are non-English natives think that they are sanctioned events. They are not sanctioned events. That has to be made clear to people that they are not sanctioned events. The WPA will exclude those from the list of possible banning tournaments. That's all they're doing. To say, yeah, it's...
I mean, the ban is not lifted. The ban is still technically in place. They're just exempting a series of events.
Yeah, correct. But those are the
ban is absolutely still there.
Those are the events that the main pros are going to play in anyway, so that's fine.
And they're moving in the right direction. There's some sense has come into it all, and they're moving in the right direction. I don't know if they're moving in the right direction.
I think they just stopped moving in the wrong direction actively. I think one is still moving in one direction.
Whatever you want to call it. But I mean, yeah. I think it's going to largely be just inconsequential anyway. I don't think it's going
to
matter.
Stuart says it's because there's supposed to be sanctions and because they meet the requirements. Yeah. What's the protocol? There seems to be no protocol for if a tournament says we're not going to sanction with you. There is no protocol. So they are being sanctioned by a different governing body.
Yeah. He's right. It is positive. It's moving in the...
Yeah. No, I'm glad that there's that. I'm glad that this has happened. I'm just this whole sanction thing. I mean, It's
so the matchroom.
It seems to me now there's two sanctioning governing bodies. Like
the McDermott Classic that's happening this week is $16,000 added. There is $10,000 added to the nine ball. There's $5,000 added to the one pocket. There's $1,000 added to the one ball, one pocket. As far as my understanding is, that does not qualify then for something that has to be WPA sanctioned because the nine ball itself is not $15,000 added. Am I wrong in saying that?
It mustn't just
I think you're added. Correct. And I think if it's not eligible to be sanctioned, then it doesn't count as a...
Yeah.
Because then you could do anything. You could turn. I could hold an event here in the Netherlands with you know only Dutch players and a prize fund of €500, and they could turn. That's not eligible for sanctions. So they don't care who plays in it. You know.
Yeah.
And Taylor is saying that the whole point of sanction process was to prevent cannibalization of the player base by strategically placing tournaments on top of each other. Used to be a thing in pool, you know. Yeah, well, yeah, we know that, Tero, and I completely understand that. But what you've got is one body now who they want to have a major every single month, and then they want to have qualifications for these majors every single month. You very quickly run out of time in the year for all the tournaments, so there aren't going to be tournaments that overlap with each other.
So let's look at
even if they do sanction everything with the WPA, the amount of tournaments they're going to hold is going to mean that there's going to be overlapping within the calendar of the WPA. As
absolutely.
Well.
You can't
stop that from happening with the amount of tournaments it's going to be.
Look at this qualifying event for the UK Open. It's in Pattaya. Or is it Pattaya or Bangkok? One of the two. It's $33,000 added for a UK Open qualifying event. Where does that fall into the full thing of being sanctioned, unsanctioned? Is that enough money where it would need to be sanctioned?
For what was that?
Does that need to be sanctioned?
What?
The UK Open qualifier that's in Pattaya. There's
33,000. Well, the UK Open should be sanctioned, so the qualifiers go underneath that sanction, I assume.
Yeah, so but there's $33,000 added to that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. 8,000 for first place for a qualifier. Yeah,
then the WPA would require that to be sanctioned.
You don't know about
there's no protocol for some. There's no protocol. The only protocol, if somebody says we're not sanctioned with you, is that they don't get ranking points. The players don't get ranking points for it.
Yeah.
But from as far as I'm aware, that's the only repercussion that there is to it, you know?
Well, I mean, with that kind of money, I'm sure they're going to get an international field too. I mean, not only do you have to have the added money, you have to also have the international field. And if you have $8,000 for first place and it's a UK qualifier, I don't see how you're not going to get players from all over Europe for that at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Europe, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be filled up with Filipino players, but I think it's filled already.
Yeah, it's we're going to see. We're going to have to wait and see how it all works out. I mean, I'm hope that the calendar can be sorted out, even though it's two different bodies that they can sort of work together a little bit, and certainly not deliberately overlap with events and stuff like that, you know. But at the end of the day. How many, how many nine ball events are going to be outside of Matchroom? A couple of WPA, I guess, but not much.
No.
Can you, the China Open?
Qatar, China. What else is there?
The Qatar Open. That might be the list.
Yeah, just China and Qatar.
Yeah.
Oh, it depends what Turning Stone eventually ends up doing. I think they're not sanctioning with either, from what I'm gathering. Is that right? I mean, it's not on the Matchroom schedule, and it's not on the WNT, or it's not on the WNT schedule, and it's not on the WPA schedule. So is Turning Stone just deciding they're not going to sanction with anybody now?
Well, Turning Stone had the problem with I don't think they have enough money to get sanctioned by the WPA. And they're not willing to change their rules. Matchroom. So Matchroom are not going to sanction them. So, yeah. I think the guy that runs the Turning Stone is quite happy for it to stay as it is and not have any input from anybody.
Mike Ziegler, is that it?
Mike Ziegler.
That's fine. The Turning Stone
that's his last name.
For a lot of players, it's a great, great tournament, you know?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's probably the most prestigious. for what he's done twice a year, filling up before the event that he's currently running, Phil is done. He's already filled the next one. I mean, that's awesome. He's done that for 50 years. I mean, it's crazy how successful that event has been. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike Zuglin. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's that and the Texas Open. I mean, that is some of the most prestigious events the U.S. can probably two of the most prestigious events that happen every single year across the world, as far as longevity and, you know, just getting the events done and making them something the players want to go to.
Yeah. Well, see, it is what it is. And, you know, the ban's been dropped now. I'm happy about that. It gives the players a bit of peace of mind.
You got to stop saying the ban is
dropped. Okay. Let's say for the top players. Well, I would say that for the top players, there is no issue anymore because they're only going to be playing in those events.
No, because there's still a lot of top players that still travel the world playing at a lot of events. I mean, you still see Mario He, Alex Kazakis, Dennis Graba. They all load up in a car and they drive across the U.S.
They're not going to think to do that because there's going to be one major every single month.
Yeah.
Well, what are they going to do? Their
schedule is going to be made for an entire year now. There's going to be one major pretty much every single month. They're not going to be doing 3-week tours around the States and stuff picking up one pocket checks here and there and stuff like that. And what tournaments are these tournaments that would need to be sanctioned by the WPA? Outside of these majors, there are no tournaments that qualify for sanctioning.
So basically what you're arguing right now is there will never be another event worth going to outside of a match.
I'm saying name one right now.
Texas Open. Derby City Classic.
That should be sanctioned by the WPA. Are you saying that?
Well, they're Matchroom ranking events. They just happened already this year.
No, you're getting this wrong. If it doesn't qualify for sanctioning by the WPA, then it doesn't matter who's run it. If it doesn't qualify, it doesn't matter. If Matchroom run a tournament that only has a $2,000 prize fund and there's only three different countries in it, it doesn't matter that it's Matchroom's event. It doesn't qualify for sanction in any way.
I understand what you're saying, but if the Derby City Classic was next week instead of in December or January, then we're exactly where you're talking about. Yeah, but we just haven't come across one yet.
The Derby City Night Ball's not WPA?
It should be. I mean, with the amount of players and the money added, I'm pretty sure it falls under WPA sanction.
Okay, maybe that's a tournament the players have to look out for in the future. Then
the Texas Open would be close, but you're going to end up finding a lot of players. You're going to end up finding that a lot of these organizers are going to be adding $14,995
exactly
to an event instead of
exactly. That is the easy Probably. Solution for them. That's the easy solution for them. If the cap is 20,000 added, right, we're adding 19,900. I mean,
sure. And then if they want to add more money on the back end, then WPA wants to sit down with their calculators and find out exactly how much money is in the prize fund. Okay.
So you're saying that that's what Matchroom want, no event outside their own. Well, no, I don't completely agree with that. I would say that
that's not true at all because they're trying to build out a tour. Like they're trying to work with as many organizers as they can to build out a tour.
They want nine ball. They don't care if there's ten ball. They don't care if there's 10 ball, 8 ball. They said to all the players, play the 10 ball World Championships. We're not going to do anything. Go for it. Do all these things. But 9 ball, you play with us. That's all they're saying.
They're actively trying to work with any organizers that have enough wherewithal and enough organization to put together events. They're not trying to make everything their events. I mean, if you want to say their events as far as their tour, then I mean, they're trying to fill out an entire calendar's worth of tours because, to be honest, there's really not one that exists right now, and there hasn't been one that existed for 30 years.
Which is pathetic. It's just completely pathetic. There's no point in all these people complaining now that Matchroom have got their act together and they're doing something
and they're actually putting together a calendar.
And now everybody's upset. Get a fucking grip. So stupid.
Stuart, that's exactly what I'm saying. They don't care about anything other than nine ball. They don't care. Right. And they don't care if the players play other events. They don't care. All they care about is nine ball.
If the World 10 Ball clashes with a World 9 Ball Tour event next year, as the contract stands, we can go and play in the World 10 Ball.
Yeah. We can go play
the world nine ball event.
We can go play the world 10 ball. Matchroom won't stop us from going to play in the world 10 ball if it clashes with the nine ball event. They just don't care.
The thing is,
they're not going to support another discipline. They're not going to put money into another discipline.
We're not trying to like pick on you, Stuart. I think you're bringing up. We've invited you onto the podcast in the past. And honestly, if you want to come onto the podcast literally right now, I will send you a link and you can join us.
We're not trying to attack you, brother. Maybe it's easier to have this conversation face to face, screen to screen.
Yeah. We're talking to a chat room at this point, right? And it probably looks like we're trying to pick on you. And you know, at least I'm not. The only thing I'm saying is it's a little bit rich saying that attacking Matchroom for only caring about nine ball when WPA is like saying, well, all of these nine ball players and 10 ball players and pocketball, they just need to go play high ball and then they can make all the money that they want to make. Well, yeah, but the rest of your tour sucks. That's all right. We have hay ball. You know, just go play some hay ball. Go to China, play some hay ball, right? It's like the WPA in the interview that they did with Melina Mike over at Windows Open, the guy basically said over and over and over again, look at all the money we have. We have hay ball. Well, yeah, but we're not hay ball players. Well, go play hay ball. Well, that's not what you, I mean. And don't get me wrong. I mean, we're talking about one event each. Basically, the WPA's claim to fame is their hay ball prize funds. And Matchroom's is nine ball. They're only trying to do nine ball. If you just look at the WPA schedule, and I know that they're still going to be adding to it. I understand that. Right now, if you just look at nine ball, 10 ball, eight ball, one pocket banks, you have literally about $600,000 in prize fund across all events. Maybe a little bit more, probably a little bit more. If you took the total prize fund, it's not a lot of money.
Yeah, if they remove the hay ball and remove the women's money as well, don't forget to remove the women's money because, you know, we're not all eligible for that. Yeah. And yes, the WPA is good of all disciplines. Yeah, that's your responsibility, but not everybody plays all disciplines. Not everybody plays all disciplines. So you can't say that there's money for this discipline is in the pot for everybody because it's not. Everyone's playing different disciplines. Everybody's, you know. I don't know. I like what the WPA do as far as the growth of the sport and getting everyone together. What they've done for European Pool with the EPBF together, that's why European Pool is as strong as it is. But it's just that top tier, there just hasn't been enough done over the years, and now Matchroom is doing it.
Completely agree. That you're absolutely bang on, Jim. That's all there is to it. There's been nothing
done. It's just
done
that top tier. Once you conquer that European group and you're the top and you go into the world, what is there for you? There just was never enough from the WPA. Yeah.
Yep.
Temple. And now Matchroom are providing it. And great, if the WPA can provide something better, let's have them fighting with each other until we get an incredible product. But at the moment,
let's be a little, I mean,
but the answer,
be a little the answer, careful the saying Matchroom is for.
The answer we'll get there is the WPA are not promoters, blah, blah, blah.
Let's be a little bit careful in saying that Matchroom is providing it, meaning like this is what they have and everything's hunky-dory now. I mean, the $1 million prize fund for the World Pool or the World Pool Championships, that's great, but the rest of their events are still not that huge. They're showing promise and they're building.
It's still so early. It's still so we gave the WPA 30 years. We gave the WPA 30 years. Let's give Matchroom 5 at least.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with anything that you're saying. I just want to be a little bit careful. Let's throw the WPA a bone over here, and let's be a little careful saying that the WPA Matchroom has provided this for the players. Like it's we're good. We've reached our destination. We've still got a lot of work to go, and I'm sure Matchroom is going to be the first to admit that. Right, Chris?
You are right. You are right. As much as I want to disagree with you, but yeah, you're right.
All right. The foundations are there to provide something that the players have wanted for a long time.
Yeah.
And already the first $1 million tournament, which is absolutely fabulous. I have some concerns, but hey, who's going to have huge concerns.
I have huge concerns with it.
My concerns are as usual. Moscone concerns and not really anything else.
Yeah. Minor is everything WNT. Like, what happens? I mean, let's take a really morbid example. Let's say a death in the immediate family for one of the top players is there, and they no longer can go to the World Pool Championship. You will be playing your entire season. You might win three more events the rest of the season, and it won't be as much as seventh place in this event.
Yep.
You basically, this is your event. This is it's your one chance.
That's the only one to win. That's
the World Championship.
The World Championship. I'm not arguing.
Yeah.
But what it does is it just decredits every other event.
No, I don't agree with that.
I think it starts to put things in the right natural order. So the US Open nine ball is the most prestigious event in the world, almost certainly. This actually elevates the world nine ball to where it's supposed to be. So with prize money, it's up there. It's taken its rightful place as the biggest tournament, where the US Open's always been the biggest.
Sure, but what it also is doing is making everything else worth near nothing. Like I said, you can the winner, whoever wins the Whirlpool Championship, literally you would have to win four of the other major WNT events just to get above that.
What did you want them to do? Say to Saudi, no, make it $500,000 prize fund and then spread the other $500,000 around the other events. Like this,
I want. Yes.
Not going to happen.
That's exactly what I want.
But then you're contracting the entire tour to Saudi, and they don't want to do that. They just want to contract the World Nine Ball.
Oh, I think they would. It's up for sale. Like if every event was in Saudi.
No, I don't think they would ever do that.
Jim, every big snooker tournament over the last 5 years has been in the UK, and there's only two or three out in China now. So you know there's literally no problem with doing it if the money's there. The players would do it if the money was there.
Yeah, I don't know. Because you're then saying to players, you've got to move to Saudi, it's...
Same for Chinese players having to move to the UK to play snooker. You know, The difference is the pool is an actual global game.
Exactly. You
know, that's where the problem would come into it. But I mean, if Saudi were going to... I think the WNT prize fund at the minute is like, I don't actually know what it is after the worlds have been added, but I think it was about $2 million before. If they elevated that and said it was going to be $20 million, mate, everybody's getting on a fucking plane to Saudi tomorrow. Done.
No. What I'm saying...
The money that's in this and the exposure that it's going to get, you would hope then that would create more exposure for the other events as well.
All I'm saying is it's
a building block, you know? It's
sure.
I just have concerns that the one event of the year... If somebody – this event – now, I agree with you, Chris, that just like – I mean, let's look at golf, right? Or let's look at tennis. I think tennis is a better example. You still have the four majors. Is Wimbledon the most prestigious? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean that the U.S. Open, the Australian Open, the French Open don't have meaning. From there, you got to have like at least three, four, five events that actually have relevance towards – your career. This right now only has one. There's literally one event every single year, and past that, nothing else truly really matters all that much when it comes to your rankings. Now, if this was a ranking based off of points, like you win 100 points if you win this tournament and not prize money, I have not a problem in the world. And you can double the amount of points that you get for the World Pool Championships. That's fine. I don't care. But what you can't do is basically make somebody who wins five of the six majors miss the wrong one, and now that person is behind somebody else, not only in prestige but in total rankings.
No, I agree. I don't particularly like the idea. Mine wasn't so much about it basically is ranking as well. I don't particularly like the idea that two Europeans could play the final of the World Pool Championships and that qualifies them for Moscone.
Yeah,
regardless of the rest of the team.
If you had an all-Filipino final...
They're going to be in the European team in Moscone just from that one tournament. I don't think you should qualify from Moscone based on one tournament.
I agree.
If you had an all-Filipino final and third and fourth place were European players, those third and fourth players are locked in.
Well, not if there's a load of them in 5, 6, 7, and 8.
You're still going to be 40... Well, you're still probably going to be $40,000 clear of 5th, 6th.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think I'm thinking that you could. I'm thinking you could probably just everything times three. You know, I'm thinking. You know, if you're talking about what was it for the for the US Open? Was it 50 or 60,000?
Yeah, 50, I think.
50, so I think
it was a $300,000 prize fund.
Under 50, 75, then, yeah, I don't know.
Theoretically, 3 1/3.
Yeah.
But what do we think the top prize is going to be? 250, right?
No.
No?
No, 200. I think it should be 200,
about 180, 200. Probably just round it off to 200.
Well, if you take a 2 or 3 1/3, so first place, let's just say 50,000, because that's a nice, well, 60,000, because that's easier to do the math with, right? You're at 180, and then you times it by the third, you're at exactly 200,000. So if it's 2 1/3 more, or sorry, 3 1/3 more, times 60, 3 1/3 times 60, you're looking at 200,000.
Yeah, I think I'll be around about 200,000, but it depends. Maybe they go deeper with prize money.
I think everybody that qualifies is going to get paid.
Yeah, and I think they'll start the prize money higher. Yeah. So it might actually not be such a big difference as you go through. They could end up saying 150 for first, and then that 50,000 gets distributed all the way down the rankings. You don't know how they're going to do it. I think what they want to have, but Jim,
if you're looking at 200,000 for first, just to finish mine out, if you're looking at 200 for first, you're probably looking at about 140 for second. Third is probably going to be around 100. So both semifinalists are going to get about $100,000. You go down to the next spot, you're down to 60,000. That's an entire major clear of the next person.
Yeah, based on that, but I don't really think that's going to be what will happen.
I don't.
What I wanted to say was what they want the future to be, as far as I'm aware, is that there is no entry fees and that everybody gets paid when they get to the tournament.
So you just pay for a pro card, right?
No, but if everybody is getting paid, then that's money going out straight away to 256 players for the main events. For the World Championships, 128 players. Now, let's say you start that off at $500 for everybody. That's already like $64,000 out of your pot just straight away. So I think that money probably gets eaten up differently than what it is at the moment. But we'll have to wait and see. She didn't give anything away. Emily didn't give anything away in her interview with Carl. Suggests to me that either it's not as massive for first place as what we are saying is 200,000, or they just haven't decided yet how to split it. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure she doesn't want to force herself into doing something that she's not comfortable doing. If there's still any debate on what the payouts are going to be, right?
It won't all be Matchroom's choice either. Saudi will be having their say on what they'd like the top prize to be. Like, they're throwing $1 million in, they're not going to let. They'll want a marquee prize for first place for sure.
Those with the gold make the money. Those with the goals make the rules.
Yep.
No, but I mean, to be honest, if they're going to do that, all of my complaints, not all of them, because I still think that it's a pretty big, but my complaints at least start to go out the window. If you do have, like Jackie says, if it's 125,000 for first, and then you just kind of lower it down 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%, because then you're paying pretty deep, pretty far. I'm kind of okay with that, but then that still means that if you don't show up for this event, something happens. You have something going on in your life, some emergency. You can't catch a flight. Your flight is canceled. You can't get there in time. That basically makes I still have that complaint where if you can't make this for whatever reason, you now will never. You have zero chance at a Moscone Cup. You have zero chance at the World Cup of Pool. You have zero chance at the World Pool Masters, and you have three events off your calendar because you didn't play this event.
I think worrying about ifs and buts for the individual players is just an impossible balancing act. I don't think they won't even be worried about that.
Can I ask Stuart to clarify something? You made a comment there saying that you felt that the WNT rankings were flawed. Can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by the WNT? You agree that you say that they're now flawed, or that the World Championships will make them flawed?
Okay, so if you base things off of money, then basically what you're doing is you're rewarding anybody who has the money to add to an event. So like it's like the Greg Hogue situation. Greg Hogue is still, outside of Shane, the only American who has ever won a WNT ranking event, and he won exactly no money, but he's won one of their events. So like, should he get credit for that? well, there were still some good players there. Should he get more credit for it because he won a WNT event? Like, you're basically taking all
credit for it. The only credit he got was the amount of ranking points that he won in dollars. That was the credit he got for it.
That's my point. That's my point. I know. I understand that. I'm getting to my broader point. Calm down. Listen up. Should we get to the point where so all these little satellite events that are happening outside of what Matchroom does, you could basically win every single one of them, and that's going to come out to be the semifinals of one of the majors, and you just won 12 events or however many you're going to do, right? Is that the way it should be? Or should it be to where if, you know, the biggest event should take the most precedent? I don't know that, but just to say that winning 12 satellite events versus winning the European Open, which one's more impressive? I think you would say, I think everybody in this world would say winning 12 WNT events is more impressive than winning one major. It might not be as prestigious for your resume,
it depends but it's more who you're impressive. Playing against. It depends who you're playing against.
It does.
Sure. But a lot of these events still have pretty good players.
Ask me which one I'd rather have. I'd rather have the UK Open. I'd rather have the UK Open. It's a major.
I'm not saying which one would you rather have. I'm saying which is more impressive.
The UK Open.
Those satellite events are not going to have
The US Open are winning 12 Sandcastle Billiards tournaments.
The satellite events, not all of them are created equal. I mean, the Scottish Open was that had a pretty decent field. There wasn't a lot of crazy top players, but it's still a pretty good field. I don't even know. Maybe Bo has a list of the players that he has for the McDermott that's starting next week. I'm not sure.
I think the money, the ranking points that you received are pretty fair compared to the field that you're playing against.
Yeah, and you have to also
remember not all of those fields are created equal.
And ranking points only apply to certain players, not to everybody anymore.
The Derby City Classic would be considered a satellite from what I'm talking about. Winning that is pretty damn impressive.
Winning is very, very impressive. Yes, it's very impressive for different reasons than winning a match.
Yes. Yeah.
For very different reasons. Than winning a match or major.
We're talking about hypotheticals here, but the difference between winning the UK Open versus 12 satellite events where three of them are Derby City Classic, it's way more impressive to win 12. I mean, we're throwing random numbers out here, but you're going
to... At the end of the day, within not too long a time, those events are not going to be part of the Matchroom Tour anyway, because all their events will be Matchroom Majors.
But when you're saying that there's imperfections in the Matchroom ranking, anytime that you have money as the sole thing, you're going to start discrediting events and crediting other events too much. And is it the best of a bad situation? Probably, but that doesn't mean it's not flawed. Like the whole saying, like democracy is a terrible form of government, except for all of the rest of them, right? Like that's kind of it. I mean, there's not going to be a perfect ranking system.
Yeah, there's going to be no perfect ranking system, that's for sure. But every other sport adopts, or most of the other major sports adopt, money lists for the rankings. So it just...
Well, like what? Like which sports?
Golf.
Golf doesn't use money, does it?
Yeah.
For the FedEx, it does.
Yeah.
But that's a completely different thing.
How do you mean?
They don't make the world rankings based off of who makes the most money. They don't do invites based on...
Okay, well, forget golf. Snooker, darts, money lists.
Okay, but those are all Matchroom. Those are all Matchroom things. I mean, give me a one outside of Matchroom.
But what are you going to do? Just have... I don't know what the problem is with having it that way. There's a complaint about having a world ranking list and then complaining about the way it's made up. Everybody knows the rules before you start. There's no...
I think what you're missing is I'm not complaining about it in a sense. You can't also just look at it and say that there's zero things wrong with it, right? You can say that there's a lot of things wrong with it and say that it's the best system that we have right now.
I actually didn't
want to hear your opinion on it. I just wanted to hear Stuart's opinion on it because he posted something. He hasn't.
So Jim is gone now.
No, I just meant I was hoping that Stuart would go deeper into it because, you know, the WPA have just had a 10-ball event, the 10-ball World Championships, and they've used a ranking that's built up of all disciplines.
I find that
ranking myself to be very flawed, because you know somebody could qualify for a 10 ball world championship and only been playing all other events. You know, that seems more flawed to me. Oh no, yes replied. It's based off money.
Well, like I said, like, I mean, it goes back to me to like democracy is a terrible form of government, except for all the other ones, right? I mean, ultimately, nothing is going to be perfect. They're all going to have imperfections. That doesn't mean that we can't critique them, and it doesn't mean we can't say which ones are good for whatever reasons they are good. All I'm saying is that I think that when you do stuff like this, with based strictly off of money, and your ranking system is strictly off of the amount of purses that you've collected, all you're doing is you're weighting it to where the biggest events matter and the other ones don't. And that's fine if that's what you want to do it. I just don't think that that's necessarily a perfect way of doing it. And maybe there isn't a perfect way of doing it. Because then if you start giving equal weights to everything, well, these little rink and dink tournaments across the US and the world matter way more than they ever should.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a good balance. There's not a perfect balance. I don't know what that is. Maybe prize money is the best. I just don't know. There's just no reason for an Albin or a Josh to ever leave their house for something that isn't a WNT event, because they're going to do so well at them that the other events they could win every single one of them for 4 years straight, and it's not gonna equal what they do in two events, right?
Yeah.
It is what it is. And that's only going to grow as these prize funds grow, because all these, sorry, I'm not trying to like talk bad about like Bo, because, I'm just using that because his event starts next week. Is he ever going to get to the point where he can add $80,000 to a McDermott Classic to where that event can compete with the payouts of a Matchroom event? No, there's just no way that he's ever going to be able to add that kind of money to an event to make it the prize funds relevant in the total WNT the list.
Well, I think what Stuart says, if all the events have the same prize money, then it works. And I think that's where it will be. The open events, Hanoi Open, UK Open, the European Open, the Spanish Open.
And that's what golf
they're
does.
They're going to be the same payouts standard. The World Championships will be higher. That will be the pivotal. US Open will be in between somewhere.
I was going to say, you have to build a hierarchy.
Yeah, it has to be a hierarchy of how important the events are.
Absolutely do not agree with you that the world pool or the world nine ball, the world pool championship should be above all of them. Maybe it's the American in me, but I just think that you're absolutely wrong that should be way higher than the US Open.
To be the world champion,
the pinnacle of any sport is to be either world champion or Olympic champion.
So. In American sports, they don't really have that, to be fair, though, do they? So
that's what it is.
Maybe it is an American thing.
They do have world championships, but they just only invite American teams to them.
Yeah, so maybe it is like a different way of viewing it for Americans.
All I'm saying is all your best European athletes are in the U.S. playing our sports. You know, that's what you guys are referring to. Have you seen the NBA? You guys are actually like, there's actually a lot of like, can you name one good basketball player that you have in your entire? Because
there isn't a league anywhere else that pays that money.
Well, that's my point. So when you guys are saying it doesn't, well, why would we even talk about being a world champion when all of the best leagues are already in our country? And don't get me wrong, because if we do not give a shit about football,
I think you need some of that mind aid stuff again. Pool, unlike basketball, pool is a global sport played all over the world. Outside of USA, shall we say, there is a few countries outside of the USA that do play it. So yes, the World Championship is the pinnacle of our sport. As simple as that.
I'm not arguing. So you're missing my point. I'm not arguing that is. But if you're going to use our sports as like a thing, well, there's no reason to have a World Championship in football or like American football or basketball or baseball.
Yeah, because you have any people to play it. Yeah, but nobody else plays it.
And everybody else who does is already here because you left your country to play it here. There's a lot of European players.
Your sports don't exist in our countries. Your sports don't exist here.
Else. I want to play American football. Where am I going to do it?
I'm
in Scotland. Anybody play American football here? No, you have to go to America for that.
Yeah, you have leagues all over Europe for basketball.
They're minor.
And then the American teams, as soon as somebody shows that they're good, in these leagues, the Americans come over and say, "Hey, buddy, you want to come play in the big okay. show?" And then they pay them loads of money, and that's it.
Okay, I can't even argue with that. You're right on that, and I think we're completely beside the point. But you brought up the American sports. All right, anyways, let's go back to this. The historically speaking, the U.S. Open over the last 30 years, besides the last 10, has been the most prestigious event in pool. Agree.
I think it still is up until possibly now. But yeah.
Do you know why that is? Because the World Championship was butchered and sent to the desert.
Hammered. Terrible.
And now you're just gonna take something that's been
it was made the pinnacle of the sport by default.
Okay, by default, sure, but that doesn't take away from the prestigious event that it was.
It is still an incredibly prestigious event, but it should not be the top of the top. Being world champion is the highest level you can achieve, other than Olympic champion in any sport. Simple as that.
So if you ask
unless it's a world ten ball and they get the selection completely wrong.
Okay. So if you ask any golfer in the world, would they rather be Olympic champion or win the Masters? How many of them do you think are going to want to win the Olympics versus the Masters?
The ones that have won the Masters will all pick the Olympics.
What if nobody's won any?
Ask Djokovic. You can win one more tournament. You can win one more tennis tournament before you retire. Which will it be? You'll pick the Olympics. 100%. I'd put my life on it.
Yeah.
Well, sure, because he's already won all of them 25 times in
Canada. And it only happens once every four years.
All right. So, Jim, you ask Djokovic the same question. Which event throughout the calendar year is the most prestigious to win? Not which would you rather win. Which do you think is the most difficult, or which one do you think is the most prestigious? He's not answering the Olympics no matter what. He's going to say Wimbledon, just like everybody else.
Well, the most difficult for him to win is the French, but that's beside the point.
Well, that's because Nadal is such a beast on clay. Mm. I mean, that's...
No, not anymore.
Well, he's 50 years old, dude. My point is that there's no, in tennis and in golf, no player on either tour ever would ever say that the Olympics is more prestigious than winning a Masters or Wimbledon. So there's a debate. There's still a debate that can be had. You guys think it's the World Pool Championship?
Maybe you're right. I'm not even saying you're necessarily wrong.
I'm just.
Do you know why it's called the Golden Slam?
Because they never used to have the Olympics. I don't know what are you talking about.
They've always had the Grand Slam, and now lots of players have had the Grand Slam or have won all of them.
Not a lot. Oh, over their career, yes. Over their career, yes. Not in a calendar year. Yes.
Very few have won all five. Anybody won all five?
Well, it's because nobody goes to the Olympics because they don't care about it.
Nobody goes to the Olympics. Andy Murray's Olympic champion. Nadal goes to the Olympics. Djokovic goes to the Olympics. He got the most upset I've ever seen him on a tennis court at the last Olympics when he won bronze. Federer is going to every Olympics trying to get his gold medal. They've all been trying to get it.
All the golfers go to the Olympics.
Matt Poland said something interesting there. The World Games is every 4 years, and it's literally the least prestigious. If you ask Darren Appleton, Jim, what would he say is the best tournament he's ever won?
Darren Appleton takes a lot of pride in his World Games.
The World Games, yeah.
You're adding in a level of pride for your country that's different. But I'm just disagreeing with you. It's okay for you to disagree with me.
I'm actually going against
what I actually think here, because I'm not even against necessarily the idea that the World Pool Championships is probably the most prestigious at this point. What I'm saying is that it doesn't need to be, right? There should be a hierarchy of events, just like you have in golf and tennis, where there are 4 to 5 to 3 big events, and those separate themselves. And then of them, you're splitting hairs, but there is kind of one clear winner, which would be Wimbledon and which would be the Masters. And this would probably be the World Pool Championships. But this doesn't exist in golf like it does, because the pool isn't part of the Olympics, right? So we get to have a world champion every single year. There is no world champion in golf every single year. Or in tennis, it's something that's unique to pool. You're right in that sense.
I think being world champion is the elite. It's as simple as that. Yeah, world champion. You. Yeah, that's just my opinion. But yeah,
There's still not a single golfer in the world that's going to say they would rather be a world champion than a Masters champion.
Well, there's no world champion golf.
Well, there's Olympics.
Yeah, it's different.
That's a world champion.
There is a World Golf Championship as well. It goes on. It's like a series of events, isn't it?
Yeah, but is that not the FedEx thing or something like that?
It might be part of it or separate. I can't remember. But there is one, but it means nothing to them. It's way below the majors, but it shouldn't be.
Wow, it's almost exactly like what I'm saying right now. Crazy.
You pick one sport for Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
Well, tennis is the same way.
Ask a snooker player what he'd rather be. Ask a boxer what he'd rather be. Ask a bowler what they would rather be.
What's the alternative for a boxer? The only thing that's in boxing is to become a heavyweight champion. And even still,
you can be European champion. You can be Commonwealth champion. You can be
Ray's here to yell at somebody. I don't know.
Oh, the beard is back.
Look at that. Yell at Nate. Yell at him.
How about your boy Ronnie taking down the Saudi
team? How about John Higgins failing on the yellow when he was up for the one? I don't like calling it 167. Can we promise never to call it a 167? Can we not just call it a golden maximum
is fine.
Let's not call it a 167 because 147 is still the highest break. Simple.
It's what
Ray, are you not coming? Are you not coming on here?
Gold ball?
Yeah. Wait. Are you not coming on here to like partake in this conversation? Are you just coming
What's
on?
The conversation? What's the conversation?
Oh God.
What's going
on? We're all thinking you're going to come.
Did I miss anything?
We're thinking you're going to come on here and like either tell me I'm stupid or you're going to tell Chris and Jim that they're stupid.
Something.
Do you have to be told again?
Something really? Don't need to be said.
How many times do we have to tell you?
All right. So you can be the deciding factor. Jim and Chris are basically saying the U.S. Open has zero prestige. Well, actually, Chris, no. I can't even say that because Chris
you're,
is actually saying
that's a lot. You're lying now, Nate.
Jim
you're
is saying that the U.S. Open is a nothing. He said it should be somewhere down below the UK Open and the European Open.
The two most significant tournaments in nine ball are the US Open and the World Nine Ball Championships. Those are the two. Those are the two. Wherever you rank those individually depends. It would make sense that the non-Americans would value the World Nine Ball title over the US Open. Probably for the Americans, they care more about the US Open.
But I think we all care about it, though. I think we'd all say it was the most prestigious, but it shouldn't be, as what we're saying.
Right.
Being world champion should be.
And to be honest with you, if that's a conversation, then we're in agreement too, because I think that the World Pool Championship, the way the pool is structured, it should be the most prestigious. What I'm saying is there's no damn way that you're ever going to tell me that it is at this point in time. Maybe going forward.
So you're telling me that Shane Van Boning should have picked up more money at Griff's than what Carlo Biado did the week before.
No, we're not talking about
as world
ball,
champion and
ball.
U.S. champion. No, world champion and U.S. Open champion.
Shut up, Jim. Now you're being an idiot. You know you're
nine ball.
I actually am going to boot you now. That's just stupid. You know good and damn well. I said at the beginning of the event that the U.S. 10 ball and the U.S. 8 ball are like jokes of a tournament at this point, and it's sad. Well, we're talking about the U.S. Open 9 ball. Don't even take that little stupid. Yeah. Go off and get yourself some more wine. You clearly need some more.
I think to your point, because the World Nine Ball has been a little bit fractured, you know what I mean? It's kind of like it's only just come back, really, and it's they're
going gonna, forward. Yes.
Yeah, they're going to make it into, you know, the top of the top for Matchroom schedule for singles, you know. But like without Matchroom, the World Nine Ball was effectively dead. You know what I mean? It was in a weird place for a while, and then it wasn't held. And
Qatar, right?
It means a lot to the guys who won. Right, to like a Darren who won his and how he won it. It's unbelievable. Bustamante finally winning one because he was probably the best player at the time that didn't have a World Nine Ball title. Like, it means quite a lot to them because it's a personal. But I think until Matchroom took it over, you couldn't argue that the World Championship was more important than the US Open. Now that Matchroom has.
There's a lot of people that actually don't even know Fedor Gorst actually won a World Nine Ball because he won it before Matchroom.
It was good when it was in Cardiff, when Matchroom had it, when they ran it in Cardiff. Yeah. That was good.
That was awesome. That was like you had Earl and Bustamante play their match in 2002. That was special times. It was really, really great.
But that was a point I made to Nate before you came on, saying that the US Open became the most prestigious tournament in pool, but almost by default.
Because it sucked so much, but everything else sucked.
No, I didn't say because it sucked so much. It was still as prestigious as it was, but it was a tournament that should have been above it. that got butchered when it got taken when Matchroom stopped doing it and it got taken to the desert.
No, yeah, I and what I'm telling you is I think you're just wrong. I think throughout the 90s and the 90s and the early 2000s, I don't care if the World Nine Ball was not taken to the desert. The U.S. Open was still the event that everybody wanted to win every year.
There's a clip that I love watching. It was I think it was 2004 World Nine Ball. It was the last rack when Peg Lyon beat and it was Pei Wei Chang in the finals.
Yeah.
This was the year after he had made the finals and lost.
Yeah.
But he snaps it off and then he's like running around the banners and freaking out and screaming. Like, I used to watch that and be like, man, I'm gonna go practice some nine ball. Getting so excited, you know. Yeah, it was absolutely, I mean, unreal. And then those are hostile crowds too. I think he was in Taiwan. Wasn't he in Chinese Taipei or somewhere?
Yeah. But like Taiwan, yeah.
Taiwan, yeah. Just unbelievable.
But so, hopefully we're just at the start of a journey of getting those kind of moments back again.
You know, yeah. I mean, the Hanoi Open, first time out, like huge, right?
The
like,
crowds, yeah. The players were absolutely in awe of the crowds that were there. And, you know, guys that had never signed autographs before were basically spending their whole day getting photographs taken and signing shirts and stuff like that.
Without talking bad about any of the players, could you imagine if that Mark Beisterbosch and that Dang final was Josh Filler versus Shane Van Boning? With how epic of a hill battle that was back and forth.
Oh, yeah, we almost lost the greatest matches in history. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, and that's with like two players that kind of they're not unknown players, but like they're definitely not marquee players. Like a Jason and Shane, or like a FSR and Sky or something like that. Like
they're not going to be on any of the promotional posters. Put it that way.
They will not be. No, well, they will be for the next. They will be
for the next one. Yeah.
Yeah. And they won't be until then.
they won't be after then either.
Well, I guess Dang is going to be on the PLP, right? Because he got invited to it. But that's the point, right? We're already getting a lot of those events. The only difference is we're already getting a lot of those matches in those finals. The only difference is like they haven't quite happened yet between like two marquee players yet that you look at and be like, oh my God, did you watch? Like, let's put it this way: when the darts, the world championship, there were players that there were like snooker players that I knew of that were like tuning into that. There were dart players all across America. There were pool players all across America. That took the internet by storm, and that was solely from like one 16-year-old kid who looked older than Jim playing the finals of that. Sorry, Jim, I had to throw you under the bus, but it's true.
You're saying I look younger than a 16-year-old.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Yeah, that's it. I mean, if we had something like that in pool. Who's to say we can't get something like that?
No, but that's what gets these stories get created when there's more television coverage, when more tournaments are getting put on TV, more young players are getting attracted. These moments will happen in pool. We talk about the elite pool players now. That won't be in 10 years' time. Those same names will not be the elite pool players. There's going to be a new influx of players coming from Asia, from Europe that are going to go through. There's going to be new names, and we're going to see these young kids coming through and getting deep into these tournaments, and these stories are going to happen. And what you saw at the darts with this Luke Littler, that's the kind of thing that's going to happen within pool, because there's just going to be so many more opportunities for players, for young players, to make the decision to now take the step to become pool players, because it's going to be financially viable. You know, it's what you would hope. And they're going to get attracted to playing. And these guys are not going to, you're not going to have 15-year domination like Shane has done, you know, in the past. These things are not going to happen. There's going to be too many good players coming through. It's going to be too difficult for people to stay at the top, you know. These stories are going to happen in pool. If it goes the way Matchroom wanted to build and the way we all hope it goes, these stories are going to happen in pool as well. We're going to get these 16, 17-year-olds coming through and blasting through a tournament now and again and making these stories. And that's what we want. That's what creates a buzz. That's what creates press. That's what, you know, you're saying pool players in the USA getting involved in the darts because of what this Luke Littler did. What about dart players in other countries getting involved in pool because they're seeing what some 16-year-old has done on a pool table? That's what
I have a feeling that it would be easier for a pool player to get involved with darts than dart players.
Because they're already there. There's probably a dartboard just behind them where they're playing, you know. But yeah, but they're watching it. You know, they're tuning in. They're watching it. It's great in viewing figures. Once, you know, that's what match. That's what Matchroom really wants just now in order to get big name sponsors in, is to create viewing figures. Once you have the viewers, once once Pool is on TV and that is dominating the schedule for that portion of time, sponsors come flying in, you know?
Saudi's getting involved is a big deal too, I think, you know?
Yeah.
We had a big poker boom in the US whenever there was $1 million purses and, you know, the money started getting really big and people just influxed into the game and it became very viable and, you know, publicized and stuff. So like stuff like the golden ball being at $1 million next turn, you know, the next turn time. They
have it doubles up now. Yeah. That's it. People are going to tune in and watch it. Everybody wants to see that first time that somebody does it, you know?
Yeah.
People are going to tune into this world championship. They're going to want to know who's going to be the guy that's going to win this first massive, prize pot. You know, who's going to be the first one to get the photograph taken on a camel and stuff like that. You know,
any updates yet on qualifiers for the other opens and stuff?
Yeah, yes, there's qualifying events all over the place. Yeah,
just on the US.
There's one in Pattaya for the UK Open. It's 33,000 added.
And it's was it 8 or 16 players that you just make the top 16 that you get in?
I just sent Nate the poster, actually. I don't know how many actually qualify from that. But
I saw two different ones for the UK Open, I think it was. And one of them was for 8 players and one of them was 16.
Yeah, there's going to be two events, the Saturday and the Sunday at McGoldrick's in Scotland. There's going to be two qualifying events in one weekend.
Personally, I wanted to go over to Europe and play in the European Open this year, but now with the new structure, you got to qualify. So it's almost like you got to go to play a qualifier. Yes. And then it's like, obviously there's like a small amount of people in the US that want to go.
16 qualifiers, according to that.
Play also in Europe, you know, but it'll be interesting to see as they build up whether or not they'll get more demand, you know, from the US.
I'm interested to see. I mean, they're going to have these qualifiers based on them needing 128 players.
Right.
But what happens when only 85 of the top 128 sign up for an event, and then you end up with 40 spots still open? Do they then get just invite people invited, or are they going to be blanks on this?
I'd imagine, yeah. Maybe rankings, or who knows? Yeah. They'll probably bump up against that right away. You know, it'll probably happen in the early ones.
It's going to be in the first year.
It was almost guaranteed before the lift on the bans or the we've had a discussion about this before the UK Open was decided to be exempted from the bans. It was almost guaranteed that UK Open was going to have maybe only about 70 or 80 of the 128 playing in it, just in case, so they could sit back and see if people really were going to get banned or not.
Yeah,
you know. So I'd be interested to see how they fill up the spots, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of players that are going to end up playing qualifiers and spend the money to go to qualifiers just to find out that they probably would have got an invite anyway because they were ranked 140.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see him try and troubleshoot it all, especially on a short turnaround, because these tournaments are going to come quick, you know?
Yeah. But there's still, you know, there's value to turning up to them, because the majors are going to have the amateur events running alongside them, right? So the UK Open's got an amateur event running alongside it at the venue. So that's good. There's still a lot of value there to turn up maybe the week before, try and qualify. If you don't qualify, then you've still got the other event to play in. So not all's lost.
Right.
Sounds fine to me. I'm ready to wrap up. I got to get going. Good.
Yeah. Well, Jim, it was nice seeing you, pal. Chris as well.
Yeah,
you too.
Hope you're all hitting them well.
I haven't formally congratulated you on your win against Filler.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Nice. He deserved it.
Yeah. Well, you know, somebody's got to come up here and do it, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, you should be a lock for Moscone now. They need somebody to beat him.
They just keep bending over to the guy, you know. They just yield. Like, come on. Put up a fight. No heart. I had to take time off of work to go beat that guy. Can you believe that? I had to go take time off of work to go, you know, show that it can happen. And now everybody's doing it. I was beating him before. It was the cool thing to do.
Right. I love you, brother. I feel bad for you the next time you have to play Josh if he sees.
I want to play him. I might just take a snippet of the last 20 seconds of this video and just send it directly to Philip.
Yeah, so can you believe I had to take time off of work just to build beat him?
I beat him before it was cool to do so.
he got beat like two or three times in a row now recently, right? He went 2-0 at the Vegas.
It sounds like you ended his career almost.
Yeah. I don't know. Enough people trying to say it. He's still 848. Well, he definitely dropped below 850. He was 850 for like a day, and then went back down. So
you're saying that getting beat by you only cost him 2 points? I can't believe that. Surely it will cost him more than that.
Fargo's who knows.
Fargo's terrible. None of my matches get put into Fargo. Only the ones I lose.
My Fargo did not go up at all. Poster.
You're joking?
No, at all. Because it only reports 1-0 or 0-1. It doesn't report like, you know, a 9-8 set.
Josh is down to an 848.
Yeah. Down to an 8. He's down to the top position in the world. Congrats. Guy's really having a tough week.
Yeah, he's struggling.
What a guy.
He probably still wakes up in the middle of the night in a dry sweat saying, "No, not you, Raymond, no."
I can't confirm that, so we'll see. I'll see him in Boston. I'll be at Boston. He'll be there. So
you're going to go to Boston for that, huh? He's doing a little tour of the U.S., huh?
Well, he's here, you know. I guess, you know, before he makes whatever the schedule is. I know Albin was saying, like, it didn't make sense for him to go to the U.K. or to go back home and then come back for PLP. You know what I mean? So I guess he's here for PLP.
Same thing. Yeah, same with Josh.
There. Yeah.
Yeah, you're just like killing yourself with jet lag at that point, right?
Oh, my gosh. Those guys... Even stuff like, you know, after that match, I got more of an appreciation for those guys because, like, we had no time. Like, it was a big moment. Usually, you know, it was like I had to play my next round right after. And, like, Shane was at U.S. Open, snaps off the U.S. Open 10 ball. And he's got to play Albin right away again first round.
Straight away, yeah, it's crazy.
And it's like that's probably when you want to play him. Like, after you snap off a tournament, you don't get any – time to decompress. You got to get back up and play. So,
well, if he loses the finals, you probably don't want to play him then.
Oh, right. But you know.
if he wins the finals, that's probably when you want to play him. There's a small distinguishing factor, but you're either going to get a pissed off Shane or a very happy Shane. You know,
this is why.
I think they're both equally dangerous. No?
Yeah.
This is why you almost like the matchroom events more. You know what I mean? Because you can go have that moment, and you know you're scheduled out for your next match, and it's not like. You're never doing that.
Less of a hustle.
Yeah.
It's just way less of a hustle, right?
Yeah. It's not.
It does seem a lot more professionalized. Well, all right. Let's close it out there, guys. Thank you all for joining. Thank you all for participating in the chat. And we'll give a special shout out to Stuart. We appreciate you taking the brunt end of some of the stuff we were talking. Again, it's us being in here and you being in the chat room. But it's the same with Ed Ladawi when he jumps in and kind of takes the back of the WPA on stuff.
Let's arrange to book Stuart in and get him in here one time. Apparently it was 5 o'clock in the morning with you. We can delay this a few hours and give you time to have a cup of coffee and get out of your bed properly.
It's less about being able
face to face on this.
It's less about being able to and more about like wanting to put yourself under the gun of that, I think. To be fair to him and the WPA, I mean, he's part of an organization that they need to speak as a whole and as a group. And if they don't speak as a group, then they're not really a proper organization, right? So putting that on one person is just not really a thing. Can't be a thing. So with that being said, all right, let's close it out for the week. I'll give a shout out quick to our sponsors. Thank you, Jacoby Custom Cues. Best cues out there, really, honestly, from breaking perspective, jumping perspective, shooting perspective. There's probably not a company in the world that makes a better product across all three. And they give back to the game by supporting people like me. So thank you to Jacoby Custom Cues, Insight Performance Coaching, Billiards Digest, Salado, Digital Pool, which has all the brackets for the U.S. Open going on right now. So check out Digital Pool to get those brackets. Onboard Sportswear, Horo Tips, and Littman Lights. Thank you to all of our sponsors and all of our Patreons that continue to allow us to do this. And with that, we'll tune off for another week. Thanks you guys all for joining. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for everybody in the chat. Thanks for joining.